saying to do it again.
Please call the McLean County Board to order. I haven't used it yet. Thank you. Please rise for invocation by Member Owens, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance.
Let us pray. Our gracious Heavenly Father, we thank you for this time where we can gather once a month to do the work of the people of this great county. We thank you for all the members that are here today. We pray for those that are not with us due to traveling. Just give them safety and let them return home. We again just thank you for our great nation. We do lift up our president to you and his cabinet. Be with them as they continue to lead our nation. We also continue to pray for our state leaders and the rough times that we have and as county governments, as we have a hard time in the future and dealing with the finances, Lord. But we ask your hand of blessing be upon us all. We pray for the discussion today that it'll be civil and that we'll continue to go and remember those who have elected us to do their business. We thank you for all you've given to us. Bless this day. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Clerk, please call the roll.
Hasselton. McIntyre,
here.
Moss,
here.
Knuckles,
here.
O'Connor,
here.
Owens,
present.
Rakowskis,
here.
Rankin,
here.
Renner,
here.
Segabiano,
here.
Soldner,
here.
Wendt,
here.
Wohlrab,
here.
Ahart, Bostic,
here.
Butler,
here.
Casely,
here.
Cavallini,
here.
Gordon, Mr. Sorensen?
Present. 18 members present. We have a quorum. We have a request from members of the public. Mr. Lee Newcomb from Bloomington, Illinois. Lee?
I want to thank you for this opportunity to speak to the board, and I hope my presentation today will be less eventful than I know some people are thinking it will be. I have a couple of concerns about the ordinance that you are looking at today, and I hope that that will be productive for you in your discussion. First, I would like to address what I think can be an attitude among county board members that I know I had when I was on the board, and it's something that I hear discussed every once in a while, and I think we need to be reminded that in our democracy and in our form of government, we have a separation of powers. In the separation of powers, you are members of the legislative branch, and I am a member of the executive branch. And you do not have the right to supervise me in my job, just as I do not have the right to supervise you in your job. We are co-equals. And in that, I would ask you to remember that I often hear these discussions about forcing county elected officials to conform to some policy in the way we might hire someone or the way we might manage our offices. But we each manage our offices in a way that is consistent with the law. And I think you have five excellent countywide elected officials. The sixth one is me. I'll leave me out and leave that to your judgment as to whether or not you think I'm any good or not. But we have at least five really well-run offices with excellent county elected officials. And I hope that you will keep that in mind and realize that although I think we have good county elected officials now, that hasn't always been the case. And even when it wasn't the case, it was up to the voters to supervise that official and up to the voters to make a change. And as members of the legislative branch, it is not your job to supervise the internal workings of the office. That's as our government and our state constitution is constructed. In terms of what you're considering today, I believe there are things in this that are potential time bombs waiting for the county. Obviously, the one of biggest concern for me that I brought up is the sexual orientation recommendation. I believe that that is already in the state code. You do not need to adopt this at the county level because you are a creature of the state government and you are covered by the state code. And I believe there are waiting time bombs there that can severely impact this county in the future. It's my belief today from the discussion that this will probably pass. But there are times when you have a concern that raised to the level that you believe you have to say something, and that's what I believed I had to say today. and I hope you will respect that. There are a number of issues that you have not considered, and there were not legal counsel that were expert in this area that were able to come because of time and distance and various issues to be able to speak to the County Finance Committee and what could have happened. I was impressed with, in reading the minutes, since I was out of town in a meeting, with the effort that the Finance Committee put in, and there was obviously a good deal of discussion, and I want you to know I respect that and appreciate it very much. But I do believe this is not something that you need to do today. In terms of how we work together as county elected officials, I know my requesting this time created some heartburn for some people, and there were some expectations of what I might say or might not say, and that's fine, that can be kind of amusing, that's part of politics. We work together best when we respect each other. We work together best when we understand that a vigorous and open debate is not something to be put aside and put behind the closed door, which is sort of the way we do things sometimes. But a vigorous and open debate is healthy. A vigorous and open debate is something that causes us to question what we're doing and why we're doing it. And it causes us to think about issues regardless of our political ideology. I hope that you will debate this provision today, and I hope that you will vigorously question what may or may not be the implication of it. And I thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Newcomb. We have a consent agenda before you. Are there any items to be removed from the consent agenda? None heard, is there? Thank you. Motion, Segubiano to approve as presented. Second, Cavallini. Questions, comments, or discussion? None heard. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Okay. Standing Committees, Executive Committee, Vice Chairman Owens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We bring two items for action here. Items A1A is a request approval of an ordinance amending an ordinance described and designating an area located partially within the City of Bloomington, the Town of Normal, and unincorporated McLean County as an enterprise zone, and I will so move.
We have a motion, Owens, second, Casely. Questions, comments, or discussion? None heard. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you.
Thank you. A1B is a request approval of an amendment to the intergovernmental agreement through the enterprise zone, and I so move.
We have a motion, Owens, second, Renner. Questions, comments, or discussion? Member Renner.
Actually, just a question. Given that we are the largest county in Illinois, and given that we have the same physical limits as all of the other 101 counties, to some degree we're, well, quite clearly, the most limited in the extent to which we can use this tool. Is there any legislation that's been proposed in Springfield or maybe moving through the legislative process that might loosen this up? Do we have any information on that?
As you may recall, we recommended, I believe it's been 2 years ago now, and the legislative committee supported legislation that would have changed this requirement so that it would not be 13 square miles for all counties, and it was not well received in Springfield.
A lot of good ideas aren't. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments, or discussion? None heard. We're voting on 7A1B. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you.
Our general report can be found on pages 152 to 156 and various other meeting minutes there follows.
Thank you. Are there any questions of Chairman Owens of the Finance Committee? None heard. Property Committee, Chairman Bostic.
I bring a request of approval of a resolution to the McLean County Board in memory and recognition of the late John W. English. And I so move.
We have a motion, Bostic, second, almost everybody else. We'll put Paul Segubiano on it. Would you like to make any additional comments?
I sure would.
Sure.
If everybody would draw their attention to the gavel sitting in front of Chairman Sorensen, that was created by John English from timber that he harvested off of his extensive tree farm. I think he had a tree planted that every tree that was native to the state of Illinois and some that were out of state planted in his front yard, and it was beautiful. Beautiful. Very nice gentleman.
Any other questions, comments, or discussion? None heard. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you. Transportation Committee, Chairman Hostleton.
We have a request for approval for the White Oak boat launch ramp, and that request is going to be for $180,000, and 20 of it's going to be participating with the county, and I so move.
We have a motion, Hostleton, second, Seldner. Questions, comments, or discussion? None heard. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you. Noted.
Okay. We have a resolution for the approving of two eligible county projects under the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, and that can be found at 176, 177. One is the Towanda Overpass, and we got a stimulus funds of $1 million for that, and the other is the Horse Farm Road, which is from Leroy Spur to Route 136, and we get $576,520. So move.
We have a motion, Hostleton, second, Cavallini. Questions, comments, or discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion passes.
The third item is, the Prairie Bike Trail, and this is occurring up at the city of Chenal, which was the only rural community to fill out the necessary papers to qualify for this. And their request initially was for $43,000, and after some conversation, we got down to $25,000 of the stimulus funds. And I so move that we approve that.
Hold on a second, Chairman Hostleton. The bike trail was actually part of your previous motion. C1B.
Yeah. We've got too many on one page. You see how that is?
Right.
What about we just make one resolution approving these three projects?
Well, you've already gotten A and B taken care of. The last one is the local share agreement having to do with the Towanda Overpass. It's on pages 178 to 184. This is the local match dollars.
The local agency agreement.
Yeah, the local agency agreement.
Which was put at their place. Should have a copy at their place that shows this.
So this is the document that was distributed to your places prior to the meeting. Chairman Hostleton, why don't you go ahead and move it, and if we have questions, we'll deal with them.
Where are we at in the stage of the contest?
item C.
Towanda Overpass?
The local agency agreement.
Regarding the city of Chenal?
No. Local agency agreement for the Towanda Overpass.
Yeah. All right. I've got a paper here that's different than that. The Towanda Overpass at Interstate 55, we'll have a $1 million out of the stimulus funds, and the total project's going to run approximately $2.3 million. And the county's is going to participate with $101,400. And I move same.
Hey, we've got a motion, Hostleton, second, Kaysley. Questions, comments, or discussion? For the purposes of clarification, again, it was the document that was distributed at your places, which is slightly upgraded from the document or updated from the document that was in your packets, and it is the local agency agreement between the county and the state IDOT, having to do with the funding and the shares of funding for the Towanda Overpass project. Are there any questions, comments, or discussion on the motion? We're voting on C1C under transportation. All right, we've got a motion, Hostleton, second, Kaysley. Questions, comments, or discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you. Are there any questions for Chairman Hoselton of the Transportation Committee?
Well, we have additional information on 185 to 194.
Great. Thank you. Are there any questions of transportation?
I got a different paper.
Finance Committee, Chairman Owens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We bring several items for action today. D1A is a request approval of an emergency appropriation ordinance amending the McLean County Fiscal Year 2008 Combined Annual Appropriations and Budget Ordinance, the McLean County General Fund 0001, McLean County Information Technologies Department 0043, and the McLean County Recorder Department 0006, and I so move.
We have a motion, Owens. Second, Segubiano. Questions, comments, or discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
Thank you. D1B is a request approval of emergency appropriation ordinance amending the McLean County Fiscal Year 2009 Combined Annual Appropriations and Budget Ordinance, McLean County General Fund 0001, McLean County Information Technologies Department 0043, and the McLean County Recorder Department 0006 through the County Auditor's Office, and I so move.
A motion, Owens. Second, Cavallini. Questions, comments, or discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you.
D1C is a request approval of an ordinance of the McLean County Board amending the Chapter 10 of the McLean County Code through the Administrator's Office, and I so move.
We have a motion, Owens. Second, Segubiano. Before we start discussion, I'm going to ask a couple of things. In the essence of good form, I'm going to ask for member civility, as always. I'm also going to recommend that we engage in vigorous debate, which I'm sure we will. And I'm going to ask that, at least early on, we discuss the issues freely, but hold off on amendments until we have an opportunity to get some discussion under our belts. I hope that makes sense to everyone. With that, questions, comments, or discussion? Member O'Connor.
Okay. Most of you know from the Finance Committee the other night, I had problems with some of the things in Section 1010, the Statement of Policy. And it seems like the more that I read this, the more problems I have, that things are open to interpretation. After talking to one of the department heads, even where they were talking about excessive absences is something that's open to interpretation. He said that he has a person who works for him who has migraines, and she is absent a lot because of migraines, but is the best worker that he has. Now, another supervisor might not find it that way. So a lot of these things are open to interpretation. I have a question. Is this going to apply 24/7, or is it only when the person is on duty? Personally, I would like to see this thing sent back, put it into some type of a committee to take out a lot of this vague language, and let's put in language for things that are just measurable. They're not so open to interpretation. We need some definitions of these things. I think it's too wide open. Thank you.
Other discussion? Member Wendt.
As I just got back from Georgia last night and couldn't find anything on this on the internet, and so I had to kind of study it last night, and I have several questions that maybe can be answered. But in the on page 227, when we discuss the general definitions of this section, the phrase, he pointed out that a general definition section has been added that uses almost exclusively the definitions as provided in the Illinois compliance statute. And I question why we are using the word almost exclusive. We don't have exactly the language that's in the code, or and since it's my understanding that this is to make sure we conform to the federal and state code, why don't we have it exactly as the state code? That I had a question on. The other thing I have a question on was I read through the Finance Committee's thing, and I didn't see anything in there whether we had anybody had done a study to look at these different things that we're adding to see if it will add to our cost of employment, which I think we should, especially at a time like this when we've got tight budgets is if there's anything in here that we've put in that's actually going to increase our cost of employment, we should think about that. The other thing is I noticed that they have made changes based on what the federal government has done in the last 30 days with the Family and Medical Leave Act. And then it goes on to say that the administrative office is continuing to interpret that and evaluate whether we need to make more changes. Now, before the discussion, when the discussion's over, I would like to make a motion so that everybody understands that, is I'd like to make a motion that we put this vote off until the next county board meeting or whichever is later when the administrative office completes its review of the Family Leave Act and comes up with the additional changes that they want in it so that we don't come back 60 days from now to amend this code. And that's what I have in mind. So with that, I'll turn the floor back.
In answer to Member Wendt's question, the definition section found in Section 10.10-1 is exactly the same as the state statute, except for the words on page 200 under subsection G. This definition shall be construed in a manner consistent with the construction placed on 775 ILCS 5/1-103 subsection 0-1, and that was added to kind of clue in a judge who might be considering this at some point in time that whatever judicial interpretation is placed on the state statute is also to be placed on this ordinance as well.
Thank you. Other questions, comments? Member Rutkauskas.
I was surprised that after the committee meeting, I probably got more calls from constituents in the public than before the committee meeting. So there still seems to be public opinion that wants to be expressed, as far as I could tell. I'm going to bring up a few things I'm hoping I'm articulating and I'm communicating for these individuals, their opinions. One was, if we have to abide by state and federal law, why do we even need this ordinance? Would it not? Is it assumed, and I need some help from Mr. Zunick, I think, on this, is it just assumed that they would apply, and so is this being redundant? And therefore, could all of this ordinance be put in a training manual instead? Could you explain that or help me understand?
I think to answer your question, I think it'd be best to have Mr. Root explain the liability issues that are involved by not incorporating the recommendations.
With leave of chair?
Please.
Thank you. In 1998, the United States Supreme Court, not the Illinois Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court issued two landmark decisions which are now the law of the land. They established a uniform standard for employer liability for sexual harassment by a supervisor under Title VII of the Federal Employment Act. Two cases, the Farragher case and the Ellerth case. And let me just quote from these cases. Employers without well-disseminated sexual harassment policies and complaint procedures will be automatically liable for harassing conduct by supervisors and other employees. Every employer should have a policy prohibiting harassment that complies in full with these two United States Supreme Court decisions as well as the Illinois Human Rights Act. This policy must be disseminated to all employees and supervisors. They must also be trained regarding harassment, and the policy must be actively enforced. If you don't, you're automatically, vicariously liable for any complaint that's filed with the EEOC, Illinois Human Rights, or in federal court. If you do have these policies in place under federal law, you will have an automatic affirmative defense, which will clearly, significantly reduce your exposure to liability. And that is why it is so important, even though possibly duplicitous and redundant, it is extremely important that you include the language from federal statutory and case law decisions into your McLean County policies to protect yourself from liability. Thank you.
And then, thank
please,
you.
Please, continue.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wood. The other was where it says it applies, this ordinance applies to elected officials. There are individuals that felt this was not a good idea for the main purpose that anyone who would monitor the elected officials would have to be the county administrator. So even though he monitored the behavior, what would he do with that information then at that point? And being that we're over, elected officials in a sense are the county administrator's boss in some respect, did not feel that was a good place to have this language in.
Well, first of all, the ordinance which is before the board this morning does not apply to the countywide elected officials. As Mr. Newcomb pointed out in his comments earlier, the countywide elected officials have always had and will always have the ability to adopt their own personnel ordinance as it applies to their office. That is one of the provisions that are guaranteed to them under Illinois law. The exception to that, and the clarification that was attempted to be made in this amendment, is they can do that, but they are still required as a countywide elected official to comply with state and federal employment law. The previous ordinance, the current ordinance, the ordinance that the board adopted and is in effect right now, the County Personnel Ordinance Chapter 10, the language that is in that ordinance, the way it is currently written, provides a blanket exemption to countywide elected offices and to a number of other entities, including collective bargaining agreements, the Sheriff's Merit Commission. That blanket exemption, as it's written today, can be read or interpreted to say that there is an exemption from even compliance with state and federal employment law. And so it was felt that our ordinance should at least recognize, again, following up on Mr. Rood's earlier comments, recognize that even the countywide electeds, the collective bargaining agreements, the Merit Commission, still are required to comply with state and federal employment law. So as far as this ordinance applying to the elected officials, it does not. They have the option, some of whom will take this ordinance and basically enact it for their offices and adopt it. Others will choose not to. But we do not have, the board does not have the authority to enact a personnel ordinance and say that this applies to all countywide electeds. And that's based on lengthy discussions with the state's attorney's office, who has, you know, gone through and reviewed this. And I'd ask Mr. Yoder or Mr. Rood to add any additional comments that they would like on this matter.
Well, as the chairman of this board has frequently stated, you know, welcome to the state of Illinois. We have and will probably always have a built-in conflict in the county code, where the county board has certain powers and duties and the county elected officials will have certain powers and duties. Elected officials will have language found in several statutes in the code indicating they have internal control of the operation of their office. Let it be said today that there is nothing that would prohibit or exclude or foreclose a county elected official from, first of all, on his or her own, monitoring state and federal law to make sure that he or she is in compliance when they are exercising the internal control of the operations of their office. However, there is also nothing that prohibits, discloses, or forecloses the county administrator from being a central clearinghouse with the cooperation of your attorneys, the state's attorney's office, to make sure that we're on top of things. And I would suggest, after 28 years of representing this board, this office of the county administrator is in a better position to monitor state and federal requirements with respect to the personnel code better than an individual county elected official. I think they're going to catch it quicker. They're in the position of getting that information disseminated to all the appointeds and electeds. There's nothing in here that says that the county administrator is now all-powerful. He is not.
Member Renner.
Just as a follow-up, Mr. Rood, is it fair to say then that if the countywide elected officials really want to minimize the suits, potential lawsuits, mm-hmm. and liability to the county, that they should adopt the county's code?
No, I'm not suggesting that at all. Far be it for me to divest them of their legal authority to have the internal control of their own operations. I've advised that on paper many, many times over the years. What I am suggesting is when you look at the proposed language of this ordinance, they are strongly encouraged to submit to the county administrator's office basically what their policies are, whatever they may be. Now they've got to comply with state and federal law just like you do and just like this office does. But they're not being ordered to do so. They're not being mandated to do so. The county administrator has not acquired a new sword that he can point at the elected officials saying that you know, before you get a budget, you're required to tell me what your policies are. On the other hand, if they do not, then they could fall in the trap of increasing their liability under these two Supreme Court cases that I've mentioned to you.
That actually was what I was mentioning. It's more of an empirical assessment.
Mm-hmm.
If they, in order to reduce the probability that the county will be liable for something, would it be in their best interest, if that was their goal, to adopt the county's policy?
It would be in their best interest if they do, or if they create their own that fairly mirrors the federal and state requirements. I mean, either way would be preferable to not having some compliance or recognition of some compliance with federal and state authority at this time.
Thank you.
Member Cavallini.
Harry Truman had a sign on his desk, "The buck stops here." We should have a sign on our desk, "The bucks stop here." We have so far spent nearly $20,000 in this study trying to bring about a new and updated and improved ordinance. Whether we accept the new and updated improved one or remain with the current one, the fact seems to me that we're still on the hook for the bucks. And there, for me, is the real issue. And if I hear what you've said, it's really the fact that the state has put us in this position. So whether or not we do one thing or this thing, we're sort of between a rock and a hard place, and the taxpayers have to keep coming up with the bucks. And it's just not this case. We know there are other issues that will be addressed, and it's going to cost the county and the taxpayers money. I believe that our legislative committee needs to get a hold of our state elected officials and say, let's take a look at this and try to improve the county's situation so that we're not on the hook for the big bucks.
Other questions, comments, or discussion? Member Wendt.
In Mr. Rood said, why then don't we just skinny our personnel code down to what those court decisions mandate us to have rather than get a lot of language that attorneys can use that's different than the code? One thing that bothers me on this is it was brought up that this thing was to bring us in compliance with the state and the federal law. And I noticed the section that I brought up last week was totally written out of it and not reworded at all. And that was the one to do with the gossip and so forth. So I question whether this, all the language in here needs to be in here. That it does pertain to bringing our code up so that we match the federal and local, or the federal and state laws. That section itself must not have been part of the federal law or the state law. Otherwise, somebody would have reworked that area, and it was just crossed out.
Yeah. George, the gossip thing didn't fit. Because I looked at that, too, and I said, where in the heck is that coming from?
I know. That's why I question everything in here.
It's a good question.
Whether it fits.
But where that came from, help me out with the page. There is. Right, what page are you on? It's in here. I know that. There it is. Page 220. The new language on page 205. 10.80D in the middle, which talks about disadvantaging an individual. That's derived from the right to privacy in the workplace. That's where the employer or supervisor cannot discipline an employee who is using lawful products, smoking, let's say, outside the workplace or during non-working hours. That is protected under the Illinois statute that's delineated on page 220, and that's why there was a change. I don't know how gossip got involved in that, but...
Right. This is why I question the consultant who soon put this stuff together.
Mm-hmm.
And that particular thing is so vague. Well, I haven't had time...
Well, I could address. Right, I could address the reasons why there is a shopping list under unacceptable behavior. It's there for two reasons. One, it's a general guideline to be provided and disseminated not only to our supervisors, but also to the folks that work for us, people that are employees. When they're hired, they need to have some understanding of what kinds of things are unacceptable so that they're forewarned in advance what kind of trouble they might be into. Now, to suggest, and I'm not saying you are, but to suggest that we need a comprehensive list of every conceivable unacceptable behavior, you're not going to find that in federal law. You're not going to find it in state law either. This has always been here, I might add, going back to about 1982 when I was involved in authoring the first personnel code with Sally Roderick and Bam Peterson. But you have to provide notice to the folks that work for you. And it really comes down to common sense. And if there's a dispute about whether somebody's discourteous or disrespectful, we invite the aggrieved party to make that complaint. And there is a process by which they can review or that complaint can be reviewed to see if there is a problem or not. What's disrespectful? You have to look at it on a case-by-case basis. It could be somebody that's, I would not suggest that it's somebody that's having a bad day because their mother just died and her husband lost a job and somebody's screaming at him over the counter in the clerk's office. On the other hand, if it's somebody that's a public employee, that's got an attitude and is rude to somebody that's being pleasant, that might be disrespectful, but there's no catch-all for every single excessive behavior that would warrant misconduct.
Well, I understand that, and that's one of the reasons I think, I know myself personally, I would like to have some more time to go over and see if there's anything else in here. And then the other factor would be the fact that the administrative office is looking into the additional things that they want to change in the that part of the code. I don't know, is this time that I can go ahead and make a motion to...
I'd like to ask you, we still have some members who would like to speak. We don't worry, everybody will get their shot. I'm going to recognize Member Bostic and then ask Vice Chairman Owens to come take the gavel.
I would like to address this to Eric or Bill Yoder, either one, or John, anybody chime in. If I'm a potential employee, could I reasonably ask you, do I have due protection under the policy if I work for an elected official versus an appointed official? Can you guarantee me that I have equal protection one way or the other?
I don't think that there's been any change in language that has changed that protection, because
The one thing that has been clear that I don't think has been changed is that if you're an aggrieved employee, you have a variety of choices of where you can go to within the county. If you want to go to your direct supervisor, that's an option. But what if your direct supervisor is harassing you? Well, then you can go to the department head, be it an elected official or an appointed official. Well, let's say they're best buds, and you don't think you're going to be treated fairly. In fact, you sense that the department head was encouraging the supervisor to harass you. Well, that you still have the opportunity to seek redress. You're not left out in the cold, because now you can go to the county administrator. And that has been here for some time. But what has changed is the state and federal laws that have mandated that we include more and more categories of folks in the protected classes, hence the addition of sexual orientation today. Does that help? Thanks.
Mr. Sorensen.
Thank you. I'm going to make a couple salient points that I think, for the most part, have been discussed to various degrees today, but I think are pertinent to keep top of mind as this initial phase of the debate comes to a close. And I feel pretty strongly about these points. You know, first, the administrator already has all of the responsibilities that are now being clarified in this proposed ordinance. We're not doing anything different. The responsibility was in place in the current personnel policy, in that the policy made it clear that the county will operate in compliance with state and federal law, and that the administrator in Section 10.10 was already responsible for monitoring the McLean County Equal Employment Opportunity Resolution. We've heard about specific case law that is directly on point and pertinent to this issue. It is advisable, proper, and prudent for this board to specifically identify sexual harassment in our policies. Including this language will do nothing but reinforce our responsibility as an employer and leave no doubt about our intention to protect our employees. As a board, it is necessary that we acknowledge that we have two different responsibilities in regard to personnel policies. One, we are, in fact, the employer for a large percentage of the folks who work for the county. They work for appointed department heads or directly under departments under the jurisdiction of this board. We have the responsibility to have a personnel policy for those people, so they understand what our intention as a management team is. Our second responsibility is to recognize the fact that state law does provide a level of autonomy to countywide elected officials. Some would have you believe that this autonomy is all-encompassing and without boundaries. But the fact is it has boundaries. Not boundaries created by this board, but rather boundaries that are created by the same state laws that created their autonomy. Simply put, the elected officials are subject to those employment laws that are state and federal in nature, and hopefully just common good sense. The only difference is, unlike other employers, if our elected officials choose to disregard these laws, it is the taxpayers of McLean County that pay the bills, not their business coffers. Frankly put, in the past, the taxpayers of McLean County have had to pay these types of bills. It's our responsibility to put these policies in place. As we respect the autonomy of these countywide elected officials, I ask that you look at Section 10.12-1 on page 201 of your packets. In this section, we as a board clearly exempt elected officers from the provisions of this policy, with the exception of those which come under state and federal law. Further, in Section 10.10-2, also on page 2, I'm sorry, 10.12-2, also on page 201 of your packets, we provide a method for elected officials to embrace all or only parts of these policies. In other words, if an elected official in McLean County wishes not to comply with this personnel policy, all they need to do is document the parts of this policy that they choose to not comply with and let us know. This seems reasonable to me, because we are the board that will have to allocate the dollars to pay for the lawsuits. We have a right to know what they're choosing not to comply with. I think there were some other good points brought up today, specifically Member O'Connor's point regarding some of the broad context and language in this. I'll point you to section 10.80. Up at the very top above the list, it specifically says that the governing principle is management discretion for what makes sense in their department. So not unlike today, where management people have that type of discretion to interpret what is excessive tardiness, what is excessive rudeness to the public, what is not excessive rudeness to the public. Management clearly has that responsibility still today to define it as appropriate in their department and office. What we are simply saying is that we have this general expectation of people showing up to work when we're paying them to show up to work, people being kind and courteous to the public and kind and courteous to their coworkers, as any other employer would expect of any employee. With that, my comments are concluded. I appreciate the opportunity to address the topic directly.
Thank you, Chairman Sorensen. Member Sagabiano.
I can certainly appreciate the comments that have been made here today, and that's what we all are here about, serving our constituents and coming together collectively to serve the best interests of McLean County. 102 counties in the state of Illinois, and McLean County continues to be looked upon as one of the advanced counties, one of the up-to-date counties, one of the moving counties in the state of Illinois. And I think each one of us can be proud to be a member of this body that's looked upon with such respect. The decisions that we make, and I can go a long ways back, but the decisions we make are based on the information, the hard work that's generated in our administrator's office, led by Mr. Zunick, assisted by Mr. Lindbergh, and now Mr. Watson. And when legal opinions are required for their decision, their deliberation, they come from a very well-qualified state's attorney's office, and I applaud them for their work. A blanket invitation was issued to every member of this board to attend the Finance Committee meeting on Wednesday, March the 4th. And some of us took advantage of that. And by doing so, and I want to thank Chairman Ben Owens, who allowed those of us who were in the audience and not members of the committee to speak to the issue, to the amendment of Chapter 10. And we had our day in court, so to speak. And I left that meeting, you know, feeling that I had my questions answered as I read this document. And I listened to the deliberation of the Finance Committee, and it comes today with a full recommendation. I take that back. Mr. O'Connor voted no, but the rest of the committee voted to recommend this to the board. I think the state's attorney's office, certainly the administrator's office, and the Finance Committee has certainly studied this issue, and those of us who were in attendance on March the 4th had our day to ask our questions. I'm completely satisfied, and I would allow the chairman of that committee to move for adoption, and I'd be more than happy to second that. Thank you.
Thank you. Member Woolrab.
Thank you very much. I'd like to say that I've been working in the field of human resources, personnel policies for 18 years. I've had the opportunity to review quite a lot of personnel policies in that time, and I just want to say that I very much appreciate the efforts of the administration in updating these policies. I think what they've crafted and what the committee has come up with is very comprehensive. It's well written and it's reasonable, and it certainly generally mirrors those policies that you'd find in other large employers. And so I'm supporting the passage of this ordinance.
Thank you. Member Wendt.
Since we have a current code and it's in force, I don't see what the hurry is to pass this today when two things. Yes, we were invited to that meeting. I happened to be out of town, couldn't be at that meeting. I'm sure there's other members that had conflicts to it. And the second is, since the administrative office is continuing studying medical leave, that'll give them time to finish that, and we can bring this up, hold over, and vote on it next meeting or at a later date when the administrative office completes their study. And I will make that motion that we hold it over till next month's meeting or to the time when the administrative office finishes its study on the medical leave.
All right. There's a motion by Member Wendt. Is there a second on the motion? Member Cavallini seconds. Any discussion? Member Nichols.
Vice Chairman Owens, and that's probably should be addressed to Mr. Zunick. Based on George's Member Wendt's comments, will that Family Medical Leave Act be a part of this particular document?
There's no way we can guarantee to you or to Mr. Wendt that by the next meeting, the federal government, which enacted amendments to the Federal and Medical Leave Act, will have published their final regulations in the Federal Register between now and April the 21st. This is, it's not a situation where there's additional work that we haven't done already that we need to do. It's a situation where the federal government, Congress, with the approval of the president, enacted certain amendments to the Federal Medical Leave Act. Those, as is the case with all federal law, the Federal Code of Federal Register will be written, advising all employers of the changes that they need to make. When those new regulations come down, then we will need to come back and amend or change this to the extent that there are changes in the Federal Register. But at this time, and one of the reasons why we provided that information to the Finance Committee is just to make everyone aware that in the area of personnel employment law, things change. They don't necessarily, they're not static. And we have incorporated in the document that you have before you now all of the changes that have been enacted and have been provided to us by the federal government. We expect there will be additional, and when those changes are in fact made, we will need to come back and provide those via an amendment process. But can I tell you this morning, or can you know Mr. Lindberg or Mr. Wasson tell you this morning that that will be finalized between May 17th and April the 21st? No, we don't control that. We don't have any way to guarantee that that, in fact, will be the case.
All right, I've got a quick point of order. I appreciate the fact that there is something on the table that was made by Wendt and seconded by Cavallini. Is this a tabling motion, an amendment? Okay.
I'm not familiar with all that, but I want it held over for the next meeting or to the date when they complete their what Mr. Watson says, their current evaluation of the sections now.
Right, okay.
Whichever is later. Okay. So if they complete their evaluation of what currently is on the books, now, obviously, from what Mr. Zunick said, they can't anticipate what's going to be in the future, sure. But according to Mr. Watson, they're evaluating the current sections to see if there's some changes we need.
All right, so let's be very clear. This is actually not a tabling motion. This is a motion to refer this issue to the administrator's office for further clarification.
No, this is a motion to hold this vote
no,
over.
No, sir. A tabling motion would be to bring back the exact same language again at a future meeting. Okay. What you're asking for is administrative changes to this document to post a review of FMLA and the FMLA laws. Correct?
I'm not real familiar with all that. I just think the vote should be put off.
So this is a referring motion to refer this back to the administrator for that work. Okay. Discussion on this motion.
Mr. Chairman, if I could ask for a point of information. When Chairman Owens was giving his report, he had moved through A, B, and he brought C up. I guess for a matter of information, clarification, is item C on the floor for discussion, or did he move it?
He did move it. It is on the floor for discussion. It's been the motion.
So this
been
has
moved.
To be amendment to send it back for clarification.
That's true.
Thank you. So if Mr. Owens has moved this for adoption, then I have the privilege of seconding that motion.
Correct.
And I would do so.
Yes, you already did.
Thank you.
You're on the record.
Thank you.
Okay, we now...
I sound like Stan Hasselton.
All right, we now have a motion to refer of the main motion, technically probably back to finance for specific input from the administrator's office. Discussion on the current motion, which is on the floor, which is now a motion to refer. Member Moss.
I think you just confused me. This, it's going back to finance committee?
That is Mr. Wendt's motion, is to refer this main motion back to finance for additional revision as appropriate, specifically for FMLA.
I didn't hear him say that.
I'm not sure that he said that, but I think that's what he meant.
I want to refer back.
Member Segubiano.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and all due respect to Mr. Wynn. I think if we will just reflect on our administrator's comments just a minute ago, that there's really nothing more that can be brought back to us. And I think, you know, this matter has been thoroughly discussed with the state's attorney's office, administrator's office, the finance committee, and those who it's intended. And I also want to make reference to Lori Wolrab's comments about her experience. I think we have all the information that we need in this document, and there's no doubt, as Mr. Zunig just stated, that, you know, it could change daily from the federal government to the state government. So I call for a defeat of this motion and move back to the original motion.
Member Owens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Due to Member Wendt's substitute motion there, again, just to reiterate, as anything, there will always be changes on this, and, you know, government's always working, always looking at changing policies, especially dealing with employment policies. I'm getting stuff all the time about revisions in my business. So again, I think right now what we have done is due diligence, and again, I would ask that the motion be defeated and that we can move on to the passage of this code that has been revised.
Okay. Other discussion on the referring motion. Member O'Connor.
I'm not sure if this fits into that or not. I just have one more comment about this unacceptable behavior laundry list. I'm concerned that if we do not tighten up the terms that are in there, I realize that's what we've had, that we are opening up the county to lawsuits. Maybe some of them would be frivolous, maybe not, but I think if we tighten up that language, we wouldn't be opening up ourselves to lawsuits.
Okay, other discussion on the Wendt-Cavallini motion. I'm going to call the question. Again, a yes vote sends this policy back to finance for modification specifically for FMLA and other things.
I know. And other things, right.
All right. A no vote returns this body to its primary motion as made by the Finance Committee. All those in favor of the Wendt-Cavallini motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
Aye.
Roll call. Again, a yes vote sends this back to finance, and no vote does not. Clerk, please call the roll. The chairman will vote. No. Motion fails 14-5. We return to debate on the original motion as presented by the Finance Committee. Other discussion on that motion? Member Moss.
Question, and I apologize if it sounds like an ignorant question at this point in the debate, but I've read those parts of the code that we have in front of us, and maybe it's answered in parts we don't have in front of us, and I apologize if it is, but are we as county board members covered by this code? Does it say in here somewhere, one way or the other?
Well, there is some recent litigation that seems to suggest that a county board member can be held responsible for unacceptable behavior as well. With respect to harassment of an employee or another department head, believe it or not. So, yes, I think with certain limitations, county board members would be responsible to comply, again, with state and federal law.
Member Owens.
Yes, thank you. There was a question brought to me by a constituent that was looking at this and in dealing with the being rude or disrespected, asked in the case, and this is just again to clarify because I think it's a good clarification to be made, if for some reason it's the county administrator that is supposedly someone thinks is rude or feels like they've just been disrespected, it is a note to clarify that if that is the person that has a complaint there, that complaint is then brought to the county board chairman, which will then bring it to the executive committee if it brings warrant. So again, that is a point of clarification that people may need to be aware. In the case of the administrator, it would be the county board chair. And again, also dealing with the looking and asking for the working with the elected officials, I know that I look at it as two sets of eyes are looking at these policies, especially for new elected office holders. I couldn't imagine what it would be like being a department elected, going into a job, knowing knowledge about it, but I don't know employment law. So, I mean, there might be some things I would want, and as an elected official, I would, ask the second look of eyes because, again, I would want to make sure I do right by my employees in my office, and then also make sure that the taxpayers are covered. So, again, I have no problem with, quote-unquote, a second look of eyes looking at this. And I know Mr. Zunick's going to be leaving shortly, but I know that Mr. Zunick would, he may not like something, but he's not going to tell an elected official that. He would just say, you can't do that, and here's the state and federal laws, and I'm assuming any administrator would do the same. So, again, that's where I stand on that that debate there. It never hurts to have a second pair of eyes looking to make sure we're all on the same page. Thank you.
Well, it is 10:05, and Mr. Zunick had another appointment at 10:15, but he tells me that he will go ahead and hang around for a while. I think I appreciate Member Moss's specific question. I guess I would ask Eric specifically, 10.12-1 in the proposed language, where it refers to all individual elected officers. I assume that that complies to members of this board exactly the same.
Yeah, I think I'd hang my hat on that code hook there.
Okay. Any other questions, comments, or discussion? None. Member Casely.
The Finance Committee did attempt to consider all of the concerns that were expressed at the meeting last month, and specifically with respect to Member Wendt's concerns, we did delete the discussing the lawful private lives of other county employees within the workplace. So I think that we have addressed that concern. We also addressed the concern a former Member Newcomb that the sexual orientation might require us to hire a pedophile in a sensitive position, like maybe the juvenile detention center or something like that. And we have inserted in this proposal today section 10.10-1, which defines all of the terms in this ordinance, and specifically with respect to sexual orientation, contains a definite statement that sexual orientation does not include physical or sexual attraction to a minor by an adult. And then it also requires that this be construed in a manner consistent with the state statute. And this section of definitions comes directly out of the state statute, except for the admonition to a judge considering this, that it is our intention that this be the same, so that this makes our ordinance neither broader nor narrower than what is already set forth in the state statute. Thank you.
Thank you. Member Segoviano.
Call for the question, Mr. Chairman.
Question's been called. All those, again, I guess we're voting on the original motion, C. We've had a request for a roll call. Call the question. Clerk, please call the roll.
Hasselton?
Okay, so point of order. A yes vote passes the motion that came from finance. A no vote does not pass the motion that came from finance.
Yes.
McIntyre?
Yes.
Moss?
No.
Knuckles?
Yes.
O'Connor?
No.
Owens?
Yes.
Rakowskis? Rankin?
Yes.
Renner?
Yes.
Segoviano?
Yes.
Soldner?
No.
Wendt?
No.
Walrab?
Yes.
Ahart?
Yes.
Bostick?
Yes.
Butler?
Yes.
Casely?
Yes.
Cavallini?
No.
Gordon is not here.
Are you voting?
Sure.
Sorensen?
Yes. Motion passes 14-5.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Moving on, D1D is request approval of emergency appropriation ordinance amending the McLean County fiscal year 2008 combined annual appropriations and budget ordinance in the auditor's office, and I so move.
We have a motion, Owen, second Cavallini. Questions, comments, or discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Thank you.
D1E is a request approval of emergency appropriation ordinance amending the McLean County fiscal year 2009 combined annual appropriations and budget ordinance in the auditor's office.
We have a motion, Owens, second, Segoviano. Questions, comments, or discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you.
Thank you. Our general report for finance can be found on 226 to 248. I'd be glad to answer any questions. Again, I would like to thank those members that were able to make it to finance, and again, for the deliberation that we've had on these issues. I think that's what people elect us to do, so I appreciate everyone's participation, especially in the finance committee.
Thank you. Are there any questions of Chairman Owens of the finance committee? None heard. Justice Committee, Chairman Renner.
We bring one item of action for the board. Item E1A is request approval of an emergency appropriation ordinance amending the McLean County fiscal year 2009 combined annual appropriation and budget ordinance, general fund 001, and the sheriff's department, and I so move that.
We have a motion, Renner, second, Rakowskis. Questions, comments, or discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
And our general report is found on pages 253 to 269.
Thank you. Are there any questions of Chairman Renner of the Justice Committee? Land Use and Development Committee, Vice Chairman Segoviano.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In order to keep John on schedule here, we bring no items for action.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Vice Chairman Segoviano of the Land Use and Development Committee? None heard. Report of the County Administrator. Mr. Zunick.
Actually, we had a long presentation with a PowerPoint scheduled for this morning, but in the interest of time, we'll pass on that. Just one item. At your place this morning, you should have found a copy of the rules of the McLean County Board. The rules of the McLean County Board were last amended in August of 2008. It is the responsibility of this board after the election and after the new members are seated for the Rules Subcommittee to meet and review the rules of the County Board and then to bring to the Executive Committee and back to the County Board any suggested amendments or changes. So we would ask you between now and April, actually the end of this month, since we'll need to send out an agenda, if you have any suggestions or recommendations that you would like for the Rules Subcommittee to consider, if you could please forward those to the County Administrator's Office. The Rules Subcommittee is planning to meet on Wednesday, April the 8th, immediately before the Finance Committee meeting. And your cooperation and assistance would be appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the Administrator's Office? No other business and communication to come before the board this morning. We have bills totaling $4,483,279.89 that were distributed at your places this morning. We have a motion, Owens, to pay the bill. Second, Cavallini. Questions, comments, or discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you. The McLean County Board is adjourned until April 21st, 2009.